"People from all over the world have passed through this village, son," said his father. "They come in search of new things, but when they leave, they're basically the same people they were when they arrived. They climb the mountain to see the castle, and they wind up thinking that the past was better than what we have now. They have blonde hair or dark skin, but basically they're the same as the people who live right here." "But I'd like to see the castles in the towns where they live," the boy explained. "Those people, when they see our land, say they would like to live here forever," his father continued. "Well, I'd like to see their land and see how they live," said his son. "People who come here have a lot of money to spend, so they can afford to travel," his father said. "Amongst us, the only ones who travel are the shepherds."
"Well then, I'll be a shepherd."
His father said no more. The next day, he gave his son a pouch that held 3 ancient Spanish gold coins. "I found these one day in the fields. I wanted them to be a part of your inheritance. But use them to buy your flock. Take to the fields, and someday you'll learn that our countryside is the best, and our women the most beautiful." And he gave the boy his blessing. The boy could see in his father's gaze a desire to be able himself to travel the world. A desire that was still alive, despite his father's having had to bury it over dozens of years under the burden of struggling for water to drink, food to eat, and the same place to sleep every night of his life. The horizon was tinged with red, and suddenly the sun appeared. The boy thought back to that conversation with his father and felt happy. He had already seen many castles and met many women, but none the equal of the one who awaited him several days hence. He owned a jacket, a book that he could trade for another, and a flock of sheep, but most important, he was able every day to live out his dream. If he were to tire of the Andalusian fields, he could sell his sheep and go to sea. By the time he had had enough of the sea, he would already have known other cities, other women, and other chances to be happy. "I couldn't have found God in the seminary," he thought, as he looked at the sunrise. Whenever he could, he sought out a new road to travel. He had never been to that ruined church before, in spite of having travelled through those parts many times. The world was huge and inexhaustible. He had only to allow his sheep to set the route for a while, and he would discover other interesting things. The problem is that they don't even realise that they're walking a new road every day. They don't see that the fields are new and the seasons change. All they think about is food and water. "Maybe we're all that way," the boy mused, "even me. I haven't thought of other women since I met the merchant's daughter." Looking at the sun, he calculated that he would reach Tarifa before midday. There, he could exchange his book for a thicker one, fill his wine bottle, shave, and have a haircut. He had to prepare himself for his meeting with the girl, and he didn't want to think about the possibility that some other shepherd with a larger flock of sheep had arrived there before him and asked for her hand. "It's the possibility of having a dream come true that makes life interesting," he thought, as he looked again at the position of the sun and hurried his pace. He had suddenly remembered that, in Tarifa, there was an old woman who interpreted dreams. The old woman led the boy to a room at the back of her house. It was separated from her living room by a curtain of coloured beads. The room's furnishings consisted of a table, an image of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and 2 chairs. The woman sat down and told him to be seated as well. Then she took both of his hands in hers and began quietly to pray. It sounded like a gypsy prayer. The boy had already had experience on the road with gypsies. They also travelled, but they had no flocks of sheep. People said that gypsies spent their lives tricking others. It was also said that they had a pact with the devil, and that they kidnapped children, and taking them away to their mysterious camps made them their slaves. As a child, the boy had always been frightened to death that he would be captured by gypsies, and this childhood fear returned when the old woman took his hands in hers. "But she has the Sacred Heart of Jesus there," he thought, trying to reassure himself.
He didn't want his hand to begin trembling, showing the old woman that he was fearful. He recited an Our Father silently. "Very interesting," said the woman, never taking her eyes from the boy's hands. And then she fell silent. The boy was becoming nervous. His hands began to tremble, and the woman sensed it. He quickly pulled his hands away. "I didn't come here to have you read my palm," he said, already regretting having come. He thought for a moment that it would be better to pay her fee and leave without learning a thing, that he was giving too much importance to his recurrent dream. "You came so you could learn about your dreams," said the old woman, "and dreams are the language of God. When he speaks in our language, I can interpret what he has said, but if he speaks in the language of the soul, it is only you who can understand. But whichever it is, I'm going to charge you for the consultation." Another trick, the boy thought. But he decided to take a chance. A shepherd always takes his chances with wolves and with drought, and that's what makes a shepherd's life exciting. "I've had the same dream twice," he said. "I dreamed that I was in a field with my sheep, when a child appeared and began to play with the animals. I don't like people to do that because the sheep are afraid of strangers. But children always seem to be able to play with them without frightening them. I don't know why. I don't know how animals know the age of human beings." "Tell me more about your dream," said the woman. "I have to get back to my cooking, and since you don't have much money, I can't give you a lot of time." "Well, the child went on playing with my sheep for quite a while," continued the boy, a bit upset. "And suddenly, the child took me by both hands and transported me to the Egyptian pyramids." He paused for a moment to see if the woman knew what the Egyptian pyramids were, but she said nothing. Then, at the Egyptian pyramids, he said the last three words slowly, so that the old woman would understand. "The child said to me, 'If you come here, you will find a hidden treasure.' And just as she was about to show me the exact location, I woke up. Both times." The woman was silent for some time. Then she again took his hands and studied them carefully. "I'm not going to charge you anything now," she said, "but I want 1/10 of the treasure, if you find it." The boy laughed out of happiness. He was going to be able to save the little money he had because of a dream about hidden treasure. "Well, interpret the dream," he said. "First, swear to me. Swear you will give me 1/10 of your treasure in exchange for what I am going to tell you." The shepherd swore that he would. The old woman asked him to swear again while looking at the image of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. "It's a dream in the language of the world," she said. "I can interpret it, but the interpretation is very difficult. That's why I feel that I deserve a part of what you find. And this is my interpretation. You must go to the pyramids in Egypt. I have never heard of them, but if it was a child who showed them to you, they exist. There you will find a treasure that will make you a rich man." The boy was surprised and then irritated. He didn't need to seek out the old woman for this, but then he remembered that he wasn't going to have to pay anything. "I didn't need to waste my time just for this," he said. "I told you that your dream was a difficult one. It's the simple things in life that are the most extraordinary. Only wise men are able to understand them, and since I am not wise, I have had to learn other arts, such as the reading of palms."
"Well, how am I going to get to Egypt?"
"I only interpret dreams. I don't know how to turn them into reality. That's why I have to live off what my daughters provide me with."
"And what if I never get to Egypt?"
"Then I don't get paid. It wouldn't be the first time." And the woman told the boy to leave, saying she'd already wasted too much time with him. So the boy was disappointed. He decided he would never again believe in dreams. He remembered that he had a number of things he had to take care of. He went to the market for something to eat. He traded his book for one that was thicker. And he found a bench in the plaza where he could sample the new wine he had bought. The day was hot, and the wine was refreshing. The sheep were at the gates of the city in a stable that belonged to a friend. The boy knew a lot of people in the city. That was what made travelling appeal to him. He always made new friends, and he didn't need to spend all of his time with them. When someone sees the same people every day, as had happened with him in the seminary, they wind up becoming a part of that person's life, and then they want the person to change. If someone isn't what others want them to be, the others become angry. Everyone seems to have a clear idea of how other people should lead their lives, but none about his or her own. He decided to wait until the sun had sunk a bit lower in the sky before following his flock back through the fields. 3 days from now, he would be with the merchant's daughter. He started to read the book he had bought. On the very first page, it described a burial ceremony, and the names of the people involved were very difficult to pronounce. If he ever wrote a book, he thought, he would present one person at a time so that the reader wouldn't have to worry about memorizing a lot of names. When he was finally able to concentrate on what he was reading, he liked the book better. The burial was on a snowy day, and he welcomed the feeling of being cold. As he read on, an old man sat down at his side and tried to strike up a conversation.
"What are they doing?" the old man asked, pointing at the people in the plaza.
"Working," the boy answered dryly, making it look as if he wanted to concentrate on his reading. Actually, he was thinking about shearing his sheep in front of the merchant's daughter, so that she could see that he was someone who was capable of doing difficult things. He had already imagined the scene many times. Every time the girl became fascinated when he explained that the sheep had to be sheared from back to front. He also tried to remember some good stories to relate as he sheared his sheep. Most of them he had read in books, but he would tell them as if they were from his personal experience. She would never know the difference because she didn't know how to read. Meanwhile, the old man persisted in his attempt to strike up a conversation. He said he was tired and thirsty, and asked if he might have a sip of the boy's wine. The boy offered his bottle, hoping that the old man would leave him alone. But the old man wanted to talk, and he asked the boy what book he was reading. The boy was tempted to be rude and move to another bench, but his father had taught him to be respectful of the elderly. So he held out the book to the man for two reasons. First, that he himself wasn't sure how to pronounce the title, and second, that if the old man didn't know how to read, he would probably feel ashamed and decide of his own accord to change benches. Said the old man, looking at all sides of the book, as if it were some strange object. "This is an important book, but it's really irritating." The boy was shocked. The old man knew how to read, and had already read the book. And if the book was irritating, as the old man had said, the boy still had time to change it for another.
"It's a book that says the same thing almost all the other books in the world say," continued the old man. "It describes people's inability to choose their own personal legends. And it ends up saying that everyone believes the world's greatest lie."
"What's the world's greatest lie?" the boy asked, completely surprised.
"It's this. That at a certain point in our lives, we lose control of what's happening to us, and our lives become controlled by fate. That's the world's greatest lie."
"That's never happened to me," the boy said. "They wanted me to be a priest, but I decided to become a shepherd."
"Much better," said the old man, "because you really like to travel."
"He knew what I was thinking," the boy said to himself. The old man, meanwhile, was leafing through the book without seeming to want to return it at all. The boy noticed that the man's clothing was strange. He looked like an Arab, which was not unusual in those parts. Africa was only a few hours from Tarifa. One only had to cross the narrow straits by boat. Arabs often appeared in the city, shopping and chanting their strange prayers several times a day. "Where are you from?" the boy asked.
"From many places."
"No one can be from many places," the boy said. "I'm a shepherd, and I've been to many places, but I come from only one place. From a city near an ancient castle. That's where I was born."
"Well, then, We could say that I was born in Salem.
The boy didn't know where Salem was, but he didn't want to ask, fearing that he would appear ignorant. He looked at the people in the plaza for a while. They were coming and going, and all of them seemed to be very busy.
So, what is Salem like? He asked, trying to get some sort of clue.
It's like it always has been.
No clue yet. But he knew that Salem wasn't in Andalusia. If it were, he would already have heard of it.
And what do you do in Salem? He insisted.
What do I do in Salem? The old man laughed. Well, I'm the king of Salem.
People say strange things, the boy thought. Sometimes it's better to be with the sheep who don't say anything, and better still to be alone with one's books. They tell their incredible stories at the time when you want to hear them. But when you're talking to people, they say some things that are so strange that you don't know how to continue the conversation.
My name is Melchizedek, said the old man. How many sheep do you have?
Enough, said the boy.
He could see that the old man wanted to know more about his life.
Well, then, we've got a problem. I can't help you if you feel you've got enough sheep.
The boy was getting irritated. He wasn't asking for help. It was the old man who had asked for a drink of his wine and had started the conversation.
Give me my book, the boy said. I have to go and gather my sheep and get going.
Give me one-tenth of your sheep, said the old man, and I'll tell you how to find the hidden treasure.
The boy remembered his dream, and suddenly everything was clear to him. The old woman hadn't charged him anything, but the old man, maybe he was her husband, was going to find a way to get much more money in exchange for information about something that didn't even exist. The old man was probably a gypsy, too. But before the boy could say anything, the old man leaned over, picked up a stick, and began to write in the sand of the plaza. Something bright reflected from his chest with such intensity that the boy was momentarily blinded. With a movement that was too quick for someone of his age, the man covered what it was with his cape. When his vision returned to normal, the boy was able to read what the old man had written in the sand. There, in the sand of the plaza of that small city, the boy read the names of his father and his mother and the name of the seminary he had attended. He read the name of the merchant's daughter, which he hadn't even known. And he read things he had never told anyone. I'm the king of Salem, the old man had said. Why would a king be talking with a shepherd, the boy asked, awed and embarrassed.
For several reasons, but let's say the most important is that you have succeeded in discovering your personal legend.
The boy didn't know what a person's personal legend was.
It's what you have always wanted to accomplish. Everyone, when they are young, knows what their personal legend is. At that point in their lives, everything is clear and everything is possible. They are not afraid to dream and to yearn for everything they would like to see happen to them in their lives. But as time passes, a mysterious force begins to convince them that it will be impossible for them to realize their personal legend.
None of what the old man was saying made much sense to the boy. But he wanted to know what the mysterious force was. The merchant's daughter would be impressed when he told her about that.
It's a force that appears to be negative, but actually shows you how to realize your personal legend. It prepares your spirit and your will, because there is one great truth on this planet. Whoever you are, or whatever it is that you do, when you really want something, it's because that desire originated in the soul of the universe. It's your mission on Earth.
Even when all you want to do is travel, or marry the daughter of a textile merchant?
Yes, or even search for treasure. The soul of the world is nourished by people's happiness, and also by unhappiness, envy, and jealousy. To realize one's personal legend is a person's only real obligation. All things are one. And when you want something, all the universe conspires in helping you to achieve it.
They were both silent for a time, observing the plaza and the townspeople. It was the old man who spoke first.
Why do you tend a flock of sheep?
Because I like to travel.
The old man pointed to a baker standing in his shop window at one corner of the plaza.
When he was a child, that man wanted to travel too. But he decided first to buy his bakery and put some money aside. When he's an old man, he's going to spend a month in Africa. He never realized that people are capable at any time of their lives of doing what they dream of.
He should have decided to become a shepherd, the boy said.
Well, he thought about that, the old man said. But bakers are more important people than shepherds. Bakers have homes, while shepherds sleep out in the open. Parents would rather see their children marry bakers than shepherds.
The boy felt a pang in his heart, thinking about the merchant's daughter. There was surely a baker in her town. The old man continued,
In the long run, what people think about shepherds and bakers becomes more important for them than their own personal legends.
The old man leafed through the book and fell to reading a page he came to. The boy waited, and then interrupted the old man just as he himself had been interrupted.
Why are you telling me all this?
Because you are trying to realize your personal legend, and you are at the point where you are about to give it all up.
And that's when you always appear on the scene?
Not always in this way, but I always appear in one form or another. Sometimes I appear in the form of a solution or a good idea. At other times, at a crucial moment, I make it easier for things to happen. There are other things I do, too, but most of the time people don't realize I've done them.
The old man related that the week before he'd been forced to appear before a miner and had taken the form of a stone. The miner had abandoned everything to go mining for emeralds. For 5 years he had been working a certain river and had examined hundreds of thousands of stones looking for an emerald. The miner was about to give it all up, right at the point when, if he were to examine just one more stone, just one more, he would find his emerald. Since the miner had sacrificed everything to his personal legend, the old man decided to become involved. He transformed himself into a stone that rolled up to the miner's foot. The miner, with all the anger and frustration of his 5 fruitless years, picked up the stone and threw it aside. But he had thrown it with such force that it broke the stone it fell upon, and there, embedded in the broken stone, was the most beautiful emerald in the world.
People learn early in their lives what is their reason for being, said the old man with a certain bitterness. Maybe that's why they give up on it so early, too. But that's the way it is.
The boy reminded the old man that he had said something about hidden treasure.
Treasure is uncovered by the force of flowing water, and it is buried by the same current, said the old man. If you want to learn about your own treasure, you will have to give me 1/10 of your flock.
What about 1/10 of my treasure?
The old man looked disappointed.
If you start out by promising what you don't even have yet, you'll lose your desire to work toward getting it.
The boy told him that he'd already promised to give 1/10 of his treasure to the gypsy.
Gypsies are experts at getting people to do that, sighed the old man. In any case, it's good that you've learned that everything in life has its price. That is what the warriors of the light try to teach.
The old man returned the book to the boy.
Tomorrow, at this same time, Bring me a tenth of your flock, and I will tell you how to find the hidden treasure. Good afternoon.
And he vanished around the corner of the plaza.